Thursday, we will meet.
Thursday morning, I'm supposed to see Ruth Greenslid at 9:30, so I'll drop it by after that.
Sure.
That's okay.
No problem.
I was just kidding.
If we aren't nearly the...
No, but I do know.
When we first received those, Loree Jensen went home and says, I'll send them to you. And she did. She sent them right off a brown envelope, and I don't think I even opened them.
We didn't look at them for 6 months.
No, and long in the winter, I said to her...
I broke my leg, and we were sitting here doing nothing, and he got tired of looking at me. And so he said, where are those letters?
I couldn't leave them alone once I started.
I bet.
It was...
Ah.
You haven't got tape
there's
in there?
One, yes, I do have tape.
Oh, hey, okay.
There's one of the letters, kind of interesting, when you think of the cost, about Aunt Sarah Griggs' funeral.
She was writing to these other people and was asking them if they couldn't share some of the expenses. Pay $5 towards this Aunt Sarah's funeral. But it says, if you can't, well, never mind, we will do it. And the total cost of the funeral was $25 and some cents.
And the gravestone was going to be a white one, as all the family had. Yeah. You know, that's sort of a interesting.
Imagine.
But we have seen changes. Earlene and I have seen changes here, certainly in Facetown and in the valley. The first town meeting we went to in March of 1953. We raised a sum total of $11,000. We ran two schools. It plowed the snow in the wintertime, took care of the roads in the summertime, and that's about all we did. $11,000? 2 years ago was the first year that the little town of Facetown raised $1 million. That's a change.
And there are only about 630 voters in the town. 660, somewhere in that vicinity.
But the first year was 45.
45 of us. And it used to be a battle between the north and the south. Now, if someone was ill from either side of the town, that meant the officers all came from the north one side or the south, depending on who was ill. And there was really quite a rivalry. The ladies of the north or the south put on the lunch at noon, and they weren't going to be outdone by the other group. We had some marvelous meals, I'll tell you, but it was that with new people moving in has sort of eased the...
When we first moved here, the road from Vassar's over through to this other road, in the wintertime, they never did anything. wasn't even plowed. But in the summertime, the grass used to grow up in the middle of the road. You had two wheel tracks. That's how primitive it was then.
It really is.
And if anybody, you saw somebody coming, you knew they had to be coming here because there was no other place to go. Not the only person we saw was a mailman.
Yeah. Well, but the valley has changed a lot. I'm not sure. Of course, you don't want to go back to the good old days because a lot of the things weren't so good in the old days. And I think our generation tends to be a little impatient with some of the young ones now that cry because they haven't everything. They haven't got instant success and instant home ownership and the videos and the skidoos and everything that they want. And you know, they really don't know what it was to have to gradually accumulate what you had. And it does make us a little impatient sometimes. But...
Well, Ed Irish said to me, he said, you know, there's a difference between living through it and telling somebody about it. Obviously there's a difference.
Yeah,
but he said you can't tell people. They have had to live through it, and the people that have come in haven't. And that's the major misunderstanding.
It was really poverty. When you really, almost like...
I don't know how the people in Facetown got along. It got to the point in the early 30s that they couldn't raise tax money enough to operate the town, and they had always I think it was the Capital Savings Bank, which is now the Chittenden Trust in Montpelier. Apparently they borrowed money there every year, and it got to the point where one year they said, that's it, you cannot borrow another penny. And they had to bond, they had to actually bond, and something like $10,000, that was a tremendous sum, because after we came to Facetown, I was on the board of selectmen and early served on the school board, but one of the things that we were paying, even then in 1953, was paying on this bond issue. Swanton Lime Works and the National Life and one or two others.
Meredith.
Yeah. L. Douglas Meredith had bought some of the bonds from the Capital Savings Bank, and we were paying interest and paying off on those back then. So Facetown was a pretty, almost the other side of the tracks type of town. And then, of course, the ski area, I think, obviously the ski area saved everybody up to this point. They got to where they had increasing the grand list, they had the ski areas and had the building and everything else, but it's been, as Ed says, it's different living through it than it is to tell about it.
And from what I'm hearing, certainly the ski areas have brought their share of problems and change, and I mean Ed Irish was explaining to me about his potato crop and how successful that was, but the ski areas hired away people and he couldn't get anybody to dig potatoes, so he just went out of the potato business.
This has nothing to do with Facetown, but when I was growing up, I had a brother that was close to me, about a year and a half older, and we went through school together, and one of the things, speaking of potatoes, one of the things, we used to, in the fall, pick up potatoes, and we got paid 3 cents a bushel. That was the going. And if we worked hard, we could pick up 80 bushel apiece. We worked side by side on two rows and dumped them together, so if we made $2.40, that was, we were doing well.
Where were you working?
We lived in Waitsfield, and we worked for Clarence Strong. He lived over in East Warren, almost the Waitsfield Warren town line, had a farm. And my dad had a car, and he'd let us, my brother had a license, drive up there. And that was part of the fun of going to work, because you could drive up to East Warren. But we got 3 cents a bushel. And then I remember one year, Harold Neal, Norman Neal's father, he has just beyond the Round Barn farm, is that Neal farm. He had potatoes, and it got into almost the 1st of November, and he hadn't got them all dug. And he was paying a bonus price of 5 cents a bushel to come and pick up. We went up there and picked up quite a lot, almost in the snow.
Well, I've been interviewing. We don't have to, stay right on Facetown, because I'm supposed to be interviewing about the whole valley, and in fact, I've spent some time in interviewing in East Warren.
Some of the things, of course, I lived in Waitsfield until we came up here, but grew up there and played with other kids in the valley. But one of the big things that but it was after Early and I was married, 1944, when we had a number of fires in Waitsfield. The store where my dad worked, where Carl Long owned the Valley Paint Store, there was a building where the brick building is side of the Valley Paint. It was the old, we finally put it into the old fire station. That building burned, and the back part of the store building burned.
Gosh.
You know, that was a tremendous thing. It was 20 below zero. It was in February. It caught fire on the back side, and of course, Waitsfield had no fire department. We depended on Waterbury and Montpelier. Call went in to both Montpelier and Waterbury, send the fire trucks, and of course, everybody waited and waited. And while he was waiting, he was standing there, and it was burning. Somebody went down by the bridge. They said, well, you got to have a hole in the ice so they can pump the water. And some guys went down, they cut a big hole in the ice, and fire trucks came, and when they got it, the hole was so far away they couldn't reach it, and they had to cut another one. It was during World War II, when there was rationing was on, and The firemen spent more time stealing stuff out of the store, lugging it back to a... They brought a station wagon for the guys to ride in because they wouldn't want to ride in the outside of the truck. It was full. Sugar and the shoes and everything that was rationed. Until finally Carl Long locked the door and said to let it burn rather than to have him steal all of that stuff. But the idea of it not having any protection, then it was that following December that the two mills, the feed mill and the sawmill over across the bridge burned where Miramar Ski Club is. And we still didn't have any protection. They burned those, and that was a
so then
a
you organized
thing.
A fire department.
At that time, then I was old enough, so I was on the, there was 13 of us. There was a charter, I was one of the charter members. And we still bought a small fire truck after that.
But before they bought it, after they organized, before they bought it, there was a fire locally. The Lena Jones house.
Oh, well, for many, many years, they had had the old style fire department. They had what they called a pumper that they'd drag it along on wheels and guys would operate it. And then they had a large chemical extinguisher that was on big wheels. And after we formed the fire department, we got the idea we'd better take that chemical thing with us. So somebody with a pickup would always be there and they'd back up when there was a chimney fire or whatever it was and we'd load it on. But for a long time, we never used it. We just hauled it there and the fire was put out and we hauled it back. There was one day they had one right next to the church, that brick building next to the Waitsfield Church. Had more than a chimney fire, it caught in underneath and some of the upper part of the building was burning. So they ran right. The chemical was kept over at the in the library hall. That was a town building. And so somebody ran over there and they run down the street with it and here it was. And I guess somebody said beforehand, said you got to tip it over in order to use it. Because we'd been turning the valve and it nothing.
What they really meant was take the pin out and roll the.
Well, it was a kind you had to had the soda and acid. You had to mix the two.
Oh.
So somebody took the hose and they got up on the roof and they said, "Okay, and tip it over." And somebody grabbed the handle and they tipped the whole thing over bottom side up. And when they did, the hose end struck the ground and the hose broke off and that stuff went all over everybody and everywhere. But up on the roof. Somebody grabbed on and tried to hold on to it with their hands, and I guess a little of it came out of there. At that point, they decided, well, I guess you better run, figure
sort
out how to use this thing.
Like a Keystone Cops type of
thing. Yeah, if they'd had a movie of that, yeah. Your fortune would have been made.
But the,
now we're involved with part of things. Waitsfield Fire Department now. Mm-hmm. I guess we pay a portion of
joint
it.
Joint venture.
And it's nice to have the ambulance service. Well, years ago, if you had a need in an ambulance, they sent a hearse for you.
Waterbury,
the Parker,
hearse, yeah.
Metcalf, Parker, whatever it was, would send a hearse because you needed somebody to lay out. Well, that wasn't a very good idea.
Well, when the store burned, how much of it did you lose?
They lost the whole building where this brick one went up. And that housed the...
Telephone office.
The telephone switchboard was physically in that building. Well, now you don't think that made a... The girl stayed there just as long as she dared to, and some of the rest of them. My brother was in the Seabees, and he had come home for a furlough. And he and two other guys went in there, and they tried to actually chop the cable and get the thing out, but it got so hot they couldn't do that. And they lost the switchboard and everything, so for a few days, the valley was without telephone service, and it was moved across the street to another building, and they brought in an old second-hand one from Boston or somewhere, because during the war you couldn't buy any of that stuff.
Have you seen this?
Yeah, I have seen
because
that.
Because that has a pretty good articles in the back of it.
But what?
I wanted to ask you about a little more about the store. I'm interested in general stores in general, but... The stories that come out of them, the humor, they were a meeting place, and
they were open every Monday night and every Saturday night, not until a closing time, until everybody was gone, and it could be, he worked there, and it could have been 11:30 sometimes on a Saturday night before he'd come home.
My grandfather owned the farm where the shopping center is down in Waitsfield. Actually, both shopping centers was part of that farm. And my dad grew up there. And he, when he first got married, he owned a horse. I don't know how he got it, but something with his father, my grandfather. He owned a horse, and he picked up cream from farmers and took it to the creamery. To begin with, it was in Moortown. No, it wasn't either. To begin with, it was in Waitsfield, across from the...
garage.
Where the last high school was. Mm-hmm. Then he went to Moortown. Then he got this job working for Carl Long in the store. And it must have been in the 20s, I was born 22, and I think it was before I was born. He was in there. So he spent most of his life then working in this store. And they did. They sold everything you can imagine that anybody wants. You didn't go somewhere to buy your socks and some other place to buy your shoes. Everything was right there.
But the early store even had a soda fountain, didn't it?
Well, no, that was put in. I remember. I was young when that was put in. I can remember. Well, he worked there, and my brother and I were fairly close of an age. My brother wasn't too well, so he didn't start school until a year late. So that put us both in the same grade, and we went all the way through together. And when we got to be 10 years old, we used to go in and fill shelves and do things. Didn't get paid at first, but we were there doing those things. And I can remember selling peanut butter and lard. We used to have salt salmon in the barrel, cheese that you cut off, tripe that you picked out the pockets, salt pork in these big barrels around. There was a lot of stuff that wasn't, and then my dad tells about other things, sugar and baking soda and baking powder, all those things came in bulk and you dish it out. And from then, of course, they began to package it and promote it. And
the existing building now, it was the back part that burned, and mostly the upper back part, more than the lower, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So the store is still pretty much as it was in the front, as you go in.
Yeah, the front part,
back.
It didn't change any, really. That part didn't burn. It was in the back side that burned. They did their own butchering. They slaughtered the cows and pigs and brought the carcasses to the store, and my dad was a meat cutter, and then I turned a meat cutter too after. Dad stayed there until my brother, when he came back out of the service, always wanted to own a store. And he bought the one across from, it's where the video store is down here. They didn't have that section, it had just the one that side of it. Had been a grocery store many years before. And he thought he'd come back from the service and open up that store. And he did. He came back and he bought it and he opened it up, and that made the third store. But he had a heart condition, and he died in 1947, I think it was.
Yeah, he was only out of the service
about
a year. But
before that, my dad had left Carl and gone up there and gone to work for him. I stayed with Carl, and then I was sort of promoted, sort of taking his place, and I was a meat cutter, and boy, you did everything then.
But the store was sort of a gathering place for your Saturday night. They'd come in and stand around the box stove, and they'd talk, and you just wondered if you're ever going to get rid of them so you could go home, but it was, who was the... Well, of course, this was later in the store, but do you remember Shinny Graves and how you gave him a piece of cheese?
No, that was Frank Q.
Oh, was it Frank
Q?
Yeah,
this guy, he was always hanging around, and we had the big wheel of cheese, and you cut off the pieces, and doing that, there would be little crumbs that would come down, you know, and he was always taking up the cup and reaching in and getting those crumbs. One day I decided I'd fix him, so I took some beef tallow that looked just like cheese, and I cut up little pieces, and I stuck it in there, and sure enough, and he came, and I guess that was the end of the cheese stealing.
I thought there was something that Shinny ate, and your plate gave...
This Shinny Graves that she's talking about, Elvin Graves.
He was really a joker, yes.
Used to deliver milk all around through the valley, and... There was one place, there was a couple of young girls that, Hezinella, and he delivered milk there, and he was always fooling with them. And apparently, they had made some chocolates or something, or they had some chocolates, and he was doing this, always reaching in, and they hollowed out some and put in some cotton batten. And he came along and he took one or two, and he actually ate them, and he wouldn't admit, he wasn't going to admit to those girls that there's cotton batten in them.
That was what I was thinking of, yeah.
I was doing a project on general stores, and one story I was told was the storekeeper saw the man steal some butter and put it under his hat.
This what?
He saw a man steal a pound of butter, and he put it under his hat. So what he did was he then drew him over to the stove and engaged him in long, drawn-out conversation, and eventually the butter
melted.
if you get anybody to talk about the Mad River Valley Fair that they used to have here.
I heard about, Earl Fuller spoke about it, where there was a woman that went up in a balloon and took a man with her by accident.
Oh, I've got a
newspaper clip in it, but it happened at the fly-in airport when they had the fairs down there, and that was before they came up back the Catholic Church.
Yeah, I think that was the 4th of July fair, actually,
happened, the one that, did you say Earl Fuller told you about it? Yeah, well, he told you everything about it then.
Yeah.
Yeah, about that. Actually, the guy did go up and...
And then she gave him a parachute, apparently, and he got down okay.
But I'm speaking about the one over back of the Catholic Church. After they gave up that fairgrounds, the Grange, I think it was, that sponsored these every year. When I was a young kid, they had them for a number of years. I don't know how many, but it seemed like forever they had them. And we used to go over there, and they would have a type of a fair that you see now, almost as large as, say, Champlain Valley. They'd have a couple of Ferris wheels and all of the midway then, and they have horse races. And I think Earl Fuller actually raced horses there, as I remember as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. He and I have several stories about him going. He used to go sometimes down to the Rutland Fair with his horses.
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
But this fair put on wrestling bouts too.
Yeah.
A number of sideshows.
And did they have? Was it like the fairs of today?
Absolutely,
or?
It was the same idea.
Did they have exhibits?
They had exhibits, but not like they do today, I'm sure. I remember they had a floral hall type of exhibit. My brother and I took over roosters one time, and we exhibited because you could get in free if you had an exhibit there.
And did women exhibit sort of food?
I don't think they did that much. I'm sure there were flowers and vegetables. But it was the...
Quilts?
I couldn't...
You wouldn't have been interested.
I wasn't interested in that type of thing,
no. Paid much attention.
But it was the first one in Vermont. And that grew up pretty good. It used to start about the middle of August, which was very early. And it ran like 3 days, same as the rest of them.
So it started the fair season.
Yeah, they used to get a big crowd because it was the first fair.
Uh-huh.
And then it went to... That was probably Northfield had one, I guess, and they had one in Waterbury, but this was the Madera Valley Fair. They used to get big crowds. Well, I thought it was big crowds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But
they always had gypsies, like everybody, all the rest of them. That they had there was some of them that were fortune tellers, and of course, those are the ones that kept away from them because they...
You used to have gypsies come when you were in the store.
Oh, boy, yeah. About twice a year.
And, of course, they were scared of them. You know.
Oh, yeah, you're
strange.
Well... Obviously, this was part of their pattern. I know when my dad worked in the store, and us smaller kids, we lived up in that place there in Irisville. It was half a mile away. And he would call. We got a telephone call and said, keep the kids in, there's gypsies here, or something like that. Or they would call Warren and say, the gypsies are on their way, lock your doors.
Well, we used to, way back, be told these stories of the gypsies stealing children and... But when they used to come to the store, you used to lock the door and just let a few in at a time.
Yeah.
and then let them back out. Things you couldn't do today. But
yeah, I've had a number of stories about the gypsies and, and the, the stores.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, one time in Hancock, the gypsies would mark the road, and somebody came along after them got rid of the signs.
Mm-hmm.
For telling stories, I always like to tell the story about my dad buying his first car. It was after he sold the Irisville house, and it was just before the bank closed, and he put all the money in the Waterbury Bank, and then he couldn't get it out. But this other person there, Milford Long, lived in Waitsfield, and he and his wife were friendly with my folks. They'd had a car, and it seemed like everybody else had a car, but my folks never had a car. They couldn't afford a car. But when they sold the house, they said, boy, that was a chance to buy a car. So this Milford Long got my dad to go to Waterbury to a Ford place. They went over, and he bought a brand new car, a brand new Ford, and paid something like $425 for it. And they went over to get it, and Milford, I guess his wife or somebody, took him over. But Milford got into the car, and he drove it just outside of Waterbury. Then he got on the other side, and he said to my dad, you drive. And he never had driven a car in his life. He drove, got in and drove that car.
This is your father?
Yeah.
It's my dad. And he learned to drive after he bought a car.
Yeah.
I believe, well, I heard a story of this guy that bought his first car, and he got in it. But he forgot to ask how to stop it, and he had to drive it around and around and around till it ran out of gas.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Well, what do you think are the biggest changes that you've seen here?
Probably the population. I can go to Waitsfield, and I've got to where I know people, even though they're not native people, but you don't see many, well, there's not too many native people left.
Of course, but working in a store, you used to know everyone that came to town anyhow. But
I can go down to Waitsfield and not know anyone hardly now. And you know, for somebody that's lived here all your life, it's scary. Of course, you're getting older, and we're in the older generation now. Many times I see a young person, they'll say hi, Willie, or something like that, and I say, hey, who's that guy? And it's a child of somebody that I do know.
Yeah.
And we should know the young people, but so many of them have beards or
long
hair. It's hard to recognize them when you don't see them.
Well, I'm beginning to find that with my own children's friends. You know, they change so much from
and
the
they
time they're teenagers,
and
you don't recognize them.
And I think inflation is something we can't comprehend. As I said earlier, when we first got married, I think I made something like $13 a week, and then I was raised to 18, which is a tremendous raise, but if you're paying $10 a month rent, it was all relative. But now, you know, people, the per hour that some people get, you can't begin to think of, the price of land is high.
I don't see how young people really get a start now to get a toehold and build up. Both of them have to work just to keep going each month. It's bad for the young people in this valley. The ski areas too brought in a different group of people. A lot of the people that came in that provide services and, you know, lived here were good solid citizens, and a lot of the others were, but some of the young groups that came in, the ski bum group, they're here just for a good time, and it tends to influence your own young people in that, you know, that's where everything comes easy and we should have fun and forget about tomorrow. It's a little different attitude that hasn't been good for the valley. A lot of things about the ski areas that haven't been good for the valley, some good things, but it has raised the value of property and has given work to people. but it's awfully low-paid employment. And people, because there's always an idiot somewhere that'll pay outlandish price for something, because of that, they believe that all land is of tremendous value and that everyone is wealthy simply because they live in a certain area, when there are probably more just above the poverty level people here than there are in any other area, because it's not a steady employment. It's so up and down.
I can't believe that there's been a time in time that has been, it has been so many changes. Is it in the period that we have lived from? Because I can remember as a small kid before my folks had electricity in the house. You take from then until the changes that we have seen to landing on the moon, and I can't believe you can change that much in the next 60 years, say, that we have had in this 60 mm-hmm. years, the advent of television and the medicines and everything, and the frozen foods and the processing. I can't believe that you can think of those things now. Now you've got your computers and that technology, and every time you pick up the paper, somebody's come up with a computer disk that's a million times faster than the other one, and I think you can speed up maybe some of the things, but to go in such a wonderful time from no electricity to telephones and radios and then television and all of the diseases.